Have you ever felt like a bobber on the sea? Now, a bobber, I'm talking about a fishing bobber. You know, you put it on your line, you cast it out, and it just sits there and bobs. You know, and just wherever the wind blows, it goes. And if the waves go up, you go up. And if the waves go down, you go down. Sometimes life, when it has no direction or foundation, you might feel like you're just bobbing on the ocean and the open seas. And you have no direction and no control of where you're going. And when a wind comes up, blows you this way. Another wind comes, blows you that way. And that's a life without strong foundations. And that's why we're doing this series about how you can know certain things assuredly. And we introduced last week just the fact that you can know there's a God beyond any reasonable doubt. That it's both irrational, it's reasonable, culture will prove it, and it's logical. And so we want to continue that study this morning. And so we're so glad you're here. Because so many people in this world are bobbers. They're just out there, lost, and they don't know. And some don't even care to ask the right questions. And they don't even know why they're here or where they're going. And so when someone comes along that has a story that makes sense, they often will buy into it, hook, line, and sinker. And there they are. They're following men rather than following God. So we are very glad you're here. So you can think about these things and reestablish for some the foundations of faith in God. And for others is to learn how to share this information with others so people can understand that it's reasonable to believe that there is a God. Now, when we talk about knowing assuredly, we saw last week, you can't give proof like the science world wants. Because science only deals with the physical world in which we live. But it is reasonable. And we saw in Romans chapter 1, there's reason to believe in a God. And God made it obvious to all of us. And that's the premise in which we started on, that everyone knows intuitively inside there is a God. So they're without excuse. But there's obstacles to belief. And sometimes this obstacle is science itself, which has a commitment to materialism. In other words, they're going to explain everything in a natural way and somehow leave God out of it. And what we have to do to overcome those obstacles is learn to doubt our doubts. Because the God of this world is really good at putting doubts in our mind. Now, they're not based on any reality, on any firm foundation. So we have to be brave enough to doubt those doubts and go, wait, where's the evidence for those? And demand evidence for no existence of God just as strongly as people want evidence for him. Now, that was last week. But now let's turn ourselves just to some of the reasons that we can look to the world and understand there is a God. And we can say that assuredly, and we know it. Now, the problem starts with this. We know in John chapter 1, no man has seen God at any time. And that's repeated for us in 1 John chapter 4. We see similar language in 1 Timothy chapter 6, which I'll read for you as Paul, writing one of his last letters, says, he alone possesses immortality and dwells in unapproachable light, who no man has seen or can see. To him be honor and eternal dominion. So if we are talking about a God that you can't see and nobody has seen, how are we going to prove or show that he exists? In Exodus 33, we find the Lord saying, you cannot see my face, for no man can see me and live. And so again, you might throw up your arms and say, well, then how can we know? Now we live because we live in a physical universe and we have five senses to explore this universe with. And that's our sight, our hearing, our sense of smell, our sense of taste, and our sense of touch. Now we use those to explore the world around us. And as we explore them, we learn certain things that are true. And we want to add one more sense, and that's our mind. God has given us a mind to be able to reason, and he expects us to use it to ask the right questions and demand on the right answers to those questions. Now, when we do that, we can come to a reasonable conclusion that there is a God, because we're left with evidence for that. In Psalm chapter 19, in verse 1, the heavens, and notice the verb, are telling. They're telling you something. The glory of God and their expanse is declaring. They're shouting out the handiwork of God, or the work of his hands. So what is this verse trying to suggest to us? If we'll just open our eyes, one of our senses, and look. Look at the heavens around us. Look at the stars. And it doesn't matter how far we look into the universe or how small we look into this world. We're going to see God is talking to us, and he's saying, I'm here. And that's what we want to show in today's lesson, and then finish it, Lord willing, next week. That there's evidence if we'll just open our minds and our eyes to it. In Acts chapter 4 and verse 17, here the writer says, and he did not leave himself without witness, speaking of God, that he did good and gave you rains from heaven and fruitful seasons, satisfying your hearts and with food and gladness. But again, God's left us a witness to his existence. And all we have to do is just ask the right questions and look. Now, we ended last week with a picture of this house. And we just told a story. And with a storm, what's the name of that hurricane? Harvey. I thought of your dad, Harvey. He was a gentle guy, not a storm, right? But imagine that Blake goes down to Houston area, and where there once was a vacant lot, there's now this house. And then he asked, where did that house come from? He said, well, the storm came in, the neighbor says, and it was blowing things all around. And when the rains quit and the sun came up, the house was there. And what would Blake say? Hey, anything's possible in Texas, you know. No, he would have a little doubt, wouldn't he? No, things don't, out of chaos and explosions, create something that looks like it's been designed. Especially when you walk through it and you see light switches and you don't even know what they are, but lights come on and you can see in doors and bathrooms and refrigerators. And that's exactly the way the world is. It's a home God has created for us that if we just look around, there's going to be obvious evidence of design. And we'll look at that, Lord willing, next week. And we're going to see also it's finely tuned. That things are so precise, you know a builder built them. But the first question we must ask is, where did that house come from in the first place? Did it just blow in, as some would suggest, that the universe is just a random act of natural causes? And here we are in a perfectly designed and tuned world, just like a storm blowing it in. Or did it have a divine creator? What caused it all? And so when we ask that question, we're looking at what we call the cosmology or cosmological argument. In other words, the question of first cause. Because we know that a house had to have a beginning. Would that not be true of this universe that we'd look at? Doesn't it have to have had a beginning which started it all? So that's the question that we're going to ask. A lot of people don't ask the question, say, well, we're just here, what's the big deal? Just live with it, you're here. Well, no, I want to know how I got here so I can know why I'm here and perhaps find out where I'm going. Because the science would tell us we're just an accident and we're here just by a random freak of natural acts. And you have no purpose. There's no meaning to life. And they'll just say, when you protest, what? There's no meaning. They'll say, get over it. Is that all there is? It all starts with asking this question, where did we come from? That's where the roots become. Now, we've been playing Mexican Train the last couple days. That's a game of random chance, isn't it? You just pick up dominoes, and if you get the right ones, you win or not. I think a better game is setting up dominoes in order like that, right? And you set them all up, and you can make patterns, and when it's all done, if Miko, my granddaughter, doesn't mess up the dominoes before we're ready, We call her over, and what does she do? She pushes the very first domino, right? And then we watch them go, and they all knock the next one over, and they all end up falling down. And now you've seen videos where people spend days setting up elaborate designs, and they cause these dominoes to split off and have two trails, and it's just amazing what they do. Now, if you saw that and you pushed one over, would you say, I wonder how those just blew in, or did someone set those up on purpose? And this is the argument of cause, because when you see one domino fall, you know some other domino knocked it over. Now, can you go back in infinity and find dominoes forever in our scenario? No, there had to be what? The first domino. Is that not correct? There had to be the first domino. Now, here's the question, the big question. Did that domino in a closed system knock itself over? No. Someone had to intervene outside the dominoes and push the first one over. Someone had to start it all. We know this intuitively. So why don't we apply that same reason to the questions of the universe and where we came from? And that's what we wish to do. And here is the argument in a more precise way. And you go, whoa, I'm already asleep right now. My wife said, last week's lesson was a little dry. This would be really dry if we talked about this, okay? What basically we're saying is something that exists, that comes to exist, has a cause. And we exist, therefore we had a cause. Now we wanted to explore what that cause is. Now is that not reasonable? If something exists, it had a cause. And so Clinton, I think he's here. He exists. And so is it fair to say Clinton had a cause? Something that brought him here. And that's true of everything, whether it's the light, the podium, the building, this Bible. It's also true of the universe. Now, little children, they ask that question, don't they? They ask, Mommy, when they get old enough, where did I come from? They want to know, and they'll probably say, Mommy, I was thinking cosmologically that where did I come from? Because I do exist, and everything that exists has to have a cause, so what caused me? Now, what do you say? Go ask your dad, right? But when they're old enough, you have to explain to them how we get here. Now, I don't care if it's a child or if it's a tree. Do a tree's all you point to them, they have a cause. And you know they have not existed forever because you can saw one down and count the rings, and you know they had a beginning because everything exists has a beginning, and that beginning had to have a cause. And so that's all we're arguing here. That's the argument. It's the argument of first cause. We looked at the lunar eclipse last week. Wasn't that magnificent? God was talking to each of us. And if we're going to be careful and intuitive enough just to sit down and ask the questions and think and ask, how did that moon get there? And when you start looking at the theories of how a meteorite hit the earth and it blew off a section of the earth and it kind of formed this dust and it all coagulated into a moon that's perfectly positioned the right distance from the earth to cause the right tides and it's the right distance so when it passes in front of the sun, it totally blocks it out. When you look at all how finely tuned it is, you have to ask, how did it get there? Isn't that a fair question? And that's where God's telling us, I did it, I did it. Just look, and the only reasonable answer is, I did it. And that's what we want to argue here. So here it is. I'm trying to make it as simple as I can. The first step is just to acknowledge something exists. You say, well, Jack, we can get past that. Well, you have to understand, some people don't want to give into this. Why are you laughing? Because you know it's true. They think we're living in some type of matrix. We don't know if we're real or not. It could be a dream state, and we could just be an illusion. It's someone else have programmed us. People, have you anyone met someone like that? No. All right, okay, you have. And so how do you know for sure if you're really here? I said, come up here and let me hit you, and then we'll see if you. No, I wouldn't do that. All right. But we all know, but some people don't want to acknowledge that because they know where this path leads intellectually. When we acknowledge that we exist and that we're here, we have to answer the question, where did I come from? And so the only reasonable thing is something exists. And wouldn't we all agree? And you can start this with anyone that you're talking to, that something exists. So the next question is, where did this something that exists come from? It's like the domino. It fell over. Well, this domino knocked it over. Well, what knocked that domino over? We're going to ask regressively, where did the something come from? Until we get back to the origin of all things. Does that make sense? Now, that's really quite easy. So the next question is, since something exists, this something, I don't care what it is, the universe, Clinton, we'll use Clinton, here it is, he's always existed. He looks like he's always existed. Happy, don't you, Clinton? You keep saying you're old man and you're kind of rough, but or else Clinton had a beginning. Now, when you look at Clinton, everyone would agree he had a beginning. Why is it then when we look larger, I'm talking about in our solar system, or even larger, the galaxy, or the whole universe, people say, some want to say, well, it's always been here. It's always been in here. Well, whoa, is that possible? Do we have a problem there? Let me just ask you the question. If you saw this bucket and water's running out the holes in the bottom, and I said, that bucket's been dripping forever, what would you say? That, why would you disagree with me? How come that could it not possibly be dripping forever? What, were you back there a million years ago? Were you there a billion years ago? 14 billion years ago, it was still dripping. Couldn't the holes be small enough that they just go drip every million years? Drip every million years. And so it takes 14 billion years and it's still dripping. Is that possible? What are you coming back and say? Give it enough time, what would have happened? I don't care how small you make the holes. It would have run out already. Is that not reasonable? So you know at one time that bucket had to be full or somewhat full when it started to drip. It cannot drip forever. Now why that's important is because there's a law. It's called the second law of thermodynamics. Now a lot of people are going, okay, it's time to take my nap, all right? You know, I didn't like math, and even physics is worse. There are three fundamental laws that govern our universe, and they're just plug and play. When physicists use these, astrologers, yeah, no, not astrologers, astronomers. The astrologers don't use these laws. The astronomers, when they plug in these laws, they're just given. They know they're true. They're universal. The first law is matter can neither be created nor destroyed. No, something can come from nothing. And we have a fixed state. You can't destroy matter. What we have is what we have. Now, matter is really energy is what it is. Like you take a candle, and this little light of mine, you have a little candle and you light it. We think it's matter because it's solid, but really it's just energy in a stable form. You heat it up. And it starts combusting, and it releases that energy. And it releases in the form of light, right? So you can see it. It releases the energy in form of heat, because you don't want to hold your hand over it. It'll burn. And also smoke. And when it's all burned up, you say, well, the candle's gone. No, it's not gone. It's still there, because matter can neither be created nor destroyed. All that energy is still there. It's in smoke. It's in light. It's in heat. There's a little residual ash, right? But if you could gather it all back together and push it back into a little form, you'd have a candle again. But you can't do that because it takes more energy to do that. And that's why the second law comes into effect. It's the law of entropy. And the word entropy, it means an unusable state. That everything in the universe is going from a usable state into an unusable state. Things naturally go from a highly agitated or a heated state to a cooling state. For example, just the candle. There's heat, but as that heat spreads out, you can feel it close, but can you feel it, the heat way out here? Now, is the heat still hitting you? Yeah, because you can see the light, but it's been so diffused by the coldness around it that it takes on a state of entropy. As the entropy increases, the heat or the coolness increases as well, and the usability. You say, what are you talking about? That's why tires wear out. Because there's resistance, that's what? Tires against road. Heat, it burns off part of the tire, and you lose some of your tire as you're going down the road, except for some of you kids that are burning them out, right? You're going to lose them real quick. It's fun, but not until you have to pay for them, right? Now, that's entropy. Why do your clothes wear out? It's not because there's a ghost in your dryer that somehow wears your clothes out. And there is lint, right? Where does that come off of? Your clothes. And every time you sit, you leave a little part of your clothes on the because of friction on the chair. And your clothes, do they last forever? It's the law of entropy. Everything goes from a usable state into an unusable state. And that's why perpetual motion is impossible. Now, why am I saying all this? Well, it shows that it's impossible for something to always exist. Because if it always exists, what's the conclusion? It already would have run out. The universe would have run out. Now, I'm going to take this principle and apply it in just a second. Because the only reasonable thing is it had a beginning. The universe had to have a beginning. You say, well, what do you mean? Here it's interesting. Theologians generally are delighted with the proof the universe had a beginning. But astronomers are curiously upset. It turns out the science behaves the way the rest of us do when our beliefs are in conflict with the evidence. This is Robert Jastrow. He's a NASA astronomer. Now, what's he saying? It's interesting. There used to be theories that the universe has been here forever because they didn't want to go down our path of reasoning. Because if you talk about a beginning, you have to ask who started it all. They don't want to go there. So the solution is we've been here forever until the Hubble telescope, named after Hubble, right? And it peered into the darkest recesses of our universe, and they found the most amazing thing that proved Einstein's general theory of relativity was correct. And that was the universe is expanding. They learned it by what some called redshift, because light, when it goes by big stars, it bends. And when it bends, you can see the spectrum of the light. And so you can tell by looking at a star at its light, if it has a redshift, it's going one way away from it. If it has another color, it's coming towards us, objects, right? So amazingly enough, looking at the universe, it's all expanding and at an increasing rate. They don't even know what's expanding into, because our universe is made up of matter or energy, time, and space. And so when they say the universe is expanding into nothing, you can't even comprehend what nothing is. It's not space, because space is something. Nothing is what? Nothing. There's not even dimension. Now, the implications were even more crazy. Because if the universe is expanding, that means when you go back in time, it was closer together. When you go farther back in time, what? It's closer together. And they've all concluded that at one time, there was a point of a singularity of origin. It was all in one point. The universe has a beginning. Now, that was really problematic. They were upset, like, oh, no, no, we got a problem. There's some quotes I can give you here. First of all, this is Stephen Hawking. You know who he is, the guy in the wheelchair that has to speak through a computer, supposedly one of the brightest minds of our day. Almost everyone now believes the universe and time itself, had a beginning. And they say it's the Big Bang. And we'll talk about that in a second. And then here, another quote. One after another, models designed to avert the initial cosmological singularity. You know what that means? The beginning. The steady state model, the oscillating model, the vacuum fluctuation models, they've all come and gone. Now what they are is saying, they've all tried to explain how we could all be here and still expanding. The oscillating fluctuation model is this. They used to think the universe was expanding. Then when it gets too far apart, it's like a rubber band, snaps back together. And then when it snaps, it's so condensed, it has to blow up again, so we have another big bang. And then it spreads way out, and then it snaps back together, and that's been happening forever. That's what he's saying. We realize now, no, that doesn't work. Most all science understands the proof is now in place. Cosmologists can no longer hide behind the possibility of a past eternal universe. There is now no escape. They have to face the problem of a cosmic beginning. Why is it a problem if there's a beginning? Because we have to ask who started it. Who pushed the domino? Who started it all? Because we're not talking about just space and matter. We're talking about time itself had a beginning. And they go, we don't want to go there. So that leads us to our next point. Something exists, right? And if something exists, it had to have a beginning. We're all agreement, right? Let's talk about that beginning, the something which something came from. You're with me? Either it came from nothing, just poof, there it is, or it had a cause outside of itself. Now, the first law of thermodynamics says the first option is not possible because it says matter can neither be created or destroyed. Something just can't come out of nothing. It's like going to Katy, Texas, and there's that beautiful house. Where did it come from? Just woke up and there it was. No, it had to come from something. It just can't spontaneously generate itself. And all science would prove that. So we know that it has to have a cause outside of itself. Now, what do I say outside of itself? So what if Clinton said, well, Clinton, where'd you come from? Oh, I've always been here. No, okay, Clinton, you had to come from something. Okay, I had a beginning. What caused you? I did. I caused myself. Well, no, Clinton, you can't cause yourself because we're talking about the moment you became into existence. You can't cause yourself to come into existence if you didn't exist, right? You with me? I'm confused. Okay. Something has to come from a cause outside of itself. In other words, the dynamos in our closed system, they're all lined up perfectly. They can't knock themselves over. Someone outside of that system has to come over, like Miko, and push the first domino. Then rest takes place. Can it run forever, the dynamos? No, it'll run out sooner or later. That's the second law. So everything exists. It had to have a beginning. It had to have a beginning outside of itself. When we say outside of itself, what are we talking about? Outside of time, outside of space or dimension, and outside of matter or energy. Everything we see with our eyes and our touch and feel, everything science can test, we're talking a cause outside of that. Non-physical. Now that leaves us with a huge problem, this cause outside of itself. Here's Paul Davies writing about the birth of the cosmos. What caused the Big Bang? One might consider some supernatural force. Some agency beyond space and time as being responsible for the Big Bang. Or one might prefer to regard the Big Bang as an event without cause. In other words, it just happened. All of a sudden, it appeared on its own. It seems to me that we don't have too much choice. Either something outside the physical world, that would make it what? Spiritual. Or an event without cause. Now, he's actually trying to make fun and trying to make the point. There's only really one choice. It can't be spontaneous. It had to be something outside of this world. And so we look at this, and that leads us to our fourth and final point. We know something exists. If something exists, it had to have a beginning. If it had a beginning, it had to have a cause outside of itself. That first cause is going to be non-physical, without space, matter, or time. Now, what have I just described? Without matter, before time, outside of time, and without dimension, we have just described God. You say, well, science says we can't talk about God. We don't understand God. Well, I know you can't test him with your five senses. But you can use your mind to conclude that he had to be the first cause. All the material world supports that. All science and its laws support that. And that's really what we have. We call this first cause God. Now, why do we do that? Because as we'll see later, we can know assuredly God has spoken to us. He's revealed himself to us, and that's how we know about him. If he had never revealed himself to us, we would have no idea who he is. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. But you can know assuredly there is a God, that he started all things. And that's where we open our Bibles with this most simplistic, but yet the grandest statement that has ever been made. In the beginning, what's that? The beginning of time. God, there's the intelligent force. You say, well, it's supernatural. Yes, it's supernatural because it supersedes nature, but it's an intelligent force. It's here, it says he created. There's the intelligence and the power and the energy. He created the heavens, that's dimension, and he created the earth, that's matter. He is the singular source from which all things came from. And all things point to him if we'll just open our eyes. And they said, well, if that's true, you should be able to look in the creation. It should support your theory that he is the creator. We'll do that, Lord willing, next week. Because if he could create, we would call him omnipotent, omnipotent. What does omni mean? All. Potent means what? Powerful. To create the universe as we see it, he has to be all powerful. And to make it so perfectly as we see, it's going to be finely tuned, the anthropic principle. He has to have omniscience. That's all science or knowledge. He knows everything about everything. That's why he made it so perfectly. If he lives outside of time and space, he's omnipresent. What does that mean? He's everywhere all the time. Even in the past and in the future, because he lives outside of time. All powerful, all knowing, ever present, and he's a spiritual being. And that's why no man can see him, because we only see with our physical eyes. That's the God whom we serve. You can know assuredly, Lord willing, there's the cosmological evidence. Next week, we'll look at the teleological argument. I like the word. All it is the argument of design. The argument of design. And we'll look at a watch. And we'll look at a mouse trap. And we'll show that those two things prove there's the God. It supports the first cause being God, because we see evidence of his handiwork in this world. And we'll look at a lot of other things and some animals. And we'll look at small and we'll look large. And then we'll look at the anthropic principle. And I'll have my wife coach me on how to say the words. You know me, I get going, I stumble my words. This is the finely tuned argument. And again, it's like picking up that guitar. And when it's finely tuned, every string to a note in a chord, you go, wow, someone did this. Intuitively know that has to be the case. And when you see a finely tuned universe, and science tells us it is, we know someone tuned it. We'll look at their ludicrous answers of how it got tuned. They're ludicrous. I'm talking about people that are given to naturalism. They cannot consider the option of there being a God. They come up with the most idiotic conclusions how it become finely tuned. And you're going to see it's more reasonable to believe the voice that is talking to you, there is a God. We're going to sing a song, How Great Thou Art. And it sings about our God. Because when we consider what he's made and we look about us, the only thing we can say is, my God, how great thou art. If you're with us and you realize, you know, there is a God, quit being a bobber, set your anchor deep. And it starts with understanding there is a God. And then if you understand he's talked to you through the prophets, through the Bible, and finally through his son, and you believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son, living God, and he came here to save you from your sins so you could someday live with God in eternity, and you know what you need to do, or you need to make your life right once again, won't you come? So we stand and sing this important song.